All right, good morning. Welcome back to lecture, everybody. This is Bio 231. And it is, April 6th. And we're going to go into autonomic nervous system today. We just touched on it a little bit at the end of lecture last time, but we got to finish up this chapter today. All right, so autonomic nervous system, let's consider the efferent parts of it, or the motor parts of the autonomic nervous system. So it's going to go to some effector organs. It's going to control effector organs. And what I want you to think of is the autonomic nervous system as opposed to another division of the motor nervous system. So there are two main divisions of the motor nervous system. So I want to make sure that we're all aware what the two main divisions are of the motor nervous system. What the heck is motor? What's another name for motor? Another name for motor is efferent. Sensory is afferent, right? So we're thinking about signals that are doing what? Going up to the brain from the periphery, or coming down from the brain, going out to the periphery? Yeah, starting in the brain, going out to the periphery to some kind of effector organ. So what are the two main motor pathways? Okay, so we have autonomic and somatic is maybe what I've heard, right? Somatic, the connotation for somatic means voluntary. Somatic means the body, and so when you think of somatic, think of things that are on the surface of your body as opposed to deep inside body cavities. So do you have any skeletal muscles? Did you have to learn any skeletal muscles that were deep inside body cavities? Skeletal muscles deep inside the thoracic cavity? Or skeletal muscles deep inside the abdominal cavity? Or skeletal muscles deep inside the cranial cavity? Did you have to learn a single one? And the reason is because there are none. Where are all these skeletal muscles located? Outside of these deep, what we call visceral cavities that make up your body, right? So that's the somatic compartment of your body, or the surface, or what we just call body, and that's where skeletal muscles exist. So we call that nervous system that goes to skeletal muscles the somatic nervous system, and that also means that it is what? Under your voluntary control. So somatic means voluntary, going to skeletal muscle. Okay, but there's more than just skeletal muscle. What are two other types of muscles in your body? Smooth and cardiac, right. And those are the kinds of muscles that we see deep inside body cavities. So those are visceral muscles. Those you cannot control with your voluntary nervous system. Those are controlled automatically for you by your autonomic nervous system, right? So autonomic nervous system as opposed to somatic, voluntary versus involuntary. Okay, and what we were talking about last time is how many nerves does it take to go from the central nervous system to an effector organ for somatic nervous system? We see right here on this diagram it is just one nerve fiber all the way down to a skeletal muscle. So the effector organ for somatic nervous system is a skeletal muscle, and this is a chemical synapse, and so the chemical that's used, we call that a neurotransmitter. The neurotransmitter that's used to carry information from the neuron to excite a skeletal muscle is acetylcholine. Or if you want to say acetylcholine, that's fine with me. Or it's abbreviated ACH with a little H right there. All right, so one neuron all the way through, one neuron cell. All right, as opposed to an autonomic outflow pathway, how many neurons does it take to get to an effector organ? I see here is one, here's a second one, back to back, or in series, right? And so here is a junction between nerve cells, and what do we call that structural and functional unit of communication between nerve cells? A synapse. And here I see a chemical moving across the synapse. So what kind of synapse is that? Is that a chemical or electrical synapse? It's a nice chemical synapse, and the neurotransmitter here is exactly the same as at the neuromuscular junction. It is acetylcholine. All right, so another question I would have, for a somatic nervous system, the effector organs are all skeletal muscles. What are the effector organs for the autonomic nervous system? Will it be skeletal muscle? No, because you have voluntary control of that. And as a matter of fact, that's the only thing you have voluntary control of in your whole body, is skeletal muscle. But what are the other effector organs that make up your body? You've got smooth muscle, and I heard glands. Yeah, that's really good, like sweat glands and salivary glands, and cardiac muscle. So smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and glands are the effector organs. Okay. Furthermore, the autonomic nervous system has two divisions. Just like the motor division, motor nervous system has two, somatic and autonomic. The autonomic has two divisions. And they are, you can see on this slide right here, the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. And there's an interesting relationship between these two right here. The relationship is very similar between, or similar to, the brake and gas pedal in your car. How would you describe the relationship between the brake and gas pedal of your car? Antagonistic, right? And same thing for this nervous system. But what does a gas pedal and brake pedal, what does it give you in your car? Would you drive your car without both of those? Absolutely not. It gives you precise control and balance. The same thing for the autonomic nervous system. Most organs receive dual innervation, both from the sympathetic as well as the parasympathetic divisions of the autonomic nervous system. So one important organ would be the heart, and it has precise control because it receives sympathetic innervation as well as parasympathetic innervation. It has very good precise control and balance as well. Okay, now if we look at the architecture for autonomic nervous systems, how many nerves does it take from the CNS to the effector organ? It takes two, as opposed to one for somatic nervous system. In this junction right here, this is going to be in the peripheral nervous system. All right, so I think this little gray or beige green area right here represents central nervous system, and this white background here represents peripheral nervous system. So where are these ganglia located? Remember, ganglia is what? Nerve cell bodies and dendrites where? In the peripheral nervous system someplace. So here's a group of them. So that's a ganglion. And this then is the preganglionic neuron. The second neuron is the postganglionic neuron. The neurotransmitter that's used at the synapse in the ganglion is always going to be the same neurotransmitter, which is acetylcholine, acetylcholine, acetylcholine. That's the neurotransmitter. But now what about the neurotransmitter for the postganglionic neuron? It's different depending on whether it's sympathetic or parasympathetic. So let me ask you, what's the neurotransmitter for the postganglionic fiber in the parasympathetic nervous system? How would you find that? Here's the preganglionic fiber. Here's the postganglionic fiber of the parasympathetic. So we want to look right here, and it is acetylcholine. Okay? But what is the neurotransmitter used for at the postganglionic fiber for the sympathetic nervous system? It is norepinephrine. That's what that NE stands for. All right, so this is true 99% of the time. Sometimes there's a little modification here and there, but this works as a good way for you to memorize these neurotransmitters. The other thing I noticed on this slide, there's another difference, or two other differences between the preganglionic and postganglionic fiber. And so if I say, here's a motor outflow pathway that has a preganglionic and postganglionic fiber, what kind of outflow are we talking about? Somatic or autonomic? Autonomic, because only the autonomic outflow has two fibers, right? Somatic only has one. That was just kind of a review quiz for you. All right. So let's look at the preganglionic and postganglionic. The preganglionic fiber is similar to the somatic motor neuron because look what it has. It has like these little pearls on it. What are those little pearls? Myelination. That's right. The preganglionic fibers, all preganglionic fibers are myelinated. But look at the postganglionic fibers. They are non-myelinated for both sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems. So that's an important distinction. Another distinction is that the postganglionic fiber for the sympathetic nervous system is very long. That means that this ganglia is far away from the organ that it is innervating. All right, so this is a long fiber, and we see that it's highly branched. It's a divergent circuit, so this one neuron can excite or transmit sympathetic stimulation to numerous parts of an effector organ or to numerous effector organs. Right? The parasympathetic, on the other hand, is a relatively short fiber, and is it branched? No, it means that it carries parasympathetic information very specifically to one organ, but not to a whole bunch at one time. All right, so the sympathetic nervous system is kind of characterized as being activated. Everything gets activated at one time because sympathetic signals go everywhere when the sympathetic nervous system is activated. But parasympathetic is very discrete. It usually just goes to one organ, okay, and doesn't excite your whole body with parasympathetic stimulation. Another way to think of a more global stimulation effect of the sympathetic nervous system is if we consider this last pathway on the slide right here. This is a modification. I only see one nerve fiber. I don't see a postganglionic fiber anywhere. All right, we're looking at the adrenal gland. Maybe you recognize this as adrenal gland sitting on top of the kidney. And this sympathetic fiber doesn't go to the cortex, but goes all the way into the medulla of the adrenal gland. And there are special cells in there. I think we learned the name of those as chromaffin cells. And when they are stimulated with acetylcholine from the preganglionic neuron, they don't transmit a nerve impulse like these other postganglionic cells do. They automatically release epinephrine and norepinephrine into the extracellular fluid, which then gets picked up by a capillary. And once that epinephrine and norepinephrine is in the capillary, where does it go? Where does the blood go? Everywhere in your body, right? So it's carrying that sympathetic signaling molecule everywhere in your body. So again, that's another example of what mass activation when the sympathetic nervous system becomes stimulated. Your whole body gets stimulated with sympathetic outflow as compared to the parasympathetic, right? It does not. It's very discrete. All right, so here, this is the only example where you have a autonomic outflow pathway with only one neuron, but you should think of these chromaffin cells that are releasing these catecholamines, epinephrine and norepinephrine, which are the sympathetic signaling molecules, as like being the quasi-postganglionic neuron, except their job is not to transmit electrical impulses and release norepinephrine. They just release norepinephrine directly where? All over the body. Okay? So, and then epinephrine lasts for a long time in your body, as opposed to norepinephrine in the circulation or norepinephrine within the synapse at the end of the postganglionic fiber right here. So it has a long-lasting effect. All right, so that's some good anatomy, neuroanatomy. Let's see what I have on the word slide over here. Well, this is good. What's the effector in the somatic voluntary pathway? That would be a good question. That would be skeletal muscle, right? Voluntary muscle. What are the effectors in the autonomic or visceral motor pathways? Cardiac muscle, smooth muscle, and glands, right? Those things you don't have control over. Okay, the first neuron is myelinated. The second, or the preganglionic is myelinated. The postganglionic or second neuron is always non-myelinated. All right, but physiologically, what's the big difference between the preganglionic and postganglionic fiber? What is special about this preganglionic fiber? Because it's myelinated. What does myelination impart to this axon right here? The speed of conduction of that nerve impulse, right? Could be 100 times faster, so it's a lot faster. All right, architecture of the autonomic nervous system, we said that these two divisions are antagonistic to each other, and that doesn't provide for a feudal system. That's a very good system, right, for precise control and balance. So it is something that by design is very good for controlling important organs, and we call that antagonistic control. All right, so do you think it would be a good or a bad idea to have antagonistic control over important body functions, such as heart rate? Good or bad to have precise control over heart rate? Good, just like the velocity of your car. You have the gas pedal and brake pedal, right? So you have two divisions. All right, so those two divisions are parasympathetic and sympathetic. Let's just consider the parasympathetic for a little bit. The cell bodies, right, are in the central nervous system brainstem, or in the sacral region of the spinal cord. Only these two different locations. So here we have a slide that shows outflow from some cranial nerves. As a matter of fact, for the parasympathetic nervous system, sometimes we say that it has cranial sacral outflow. That means that these parasympathetic signals can leave the central nervous system only through these cranial nerves and through these sacral nerves, but nowhere in between. What are some divisions between these cranial nerves and sacral nerves way down over here? What levels of the spinal cord do you have? You've got cervical, you've got thoracic and lumbar, and notice there are no parasympathetic nerves that leave through the cervical region, thoracic region, or lumbar region. Only what? Craniosacral. Right? And the ganglia, let's look at this lung right here, the solid or the dark blue line, okay, represents a long myelinated preganglionic fiber, and this light blue cell right here is what? A very short non-myelinated parasympathetic postganglionic fiber right here. Right, so the ganglion for parasympathetic nervous system is right on the surface of the effector organ or even inside the effector organ. It's very, very close. And we see that same illustration right here on the heart. The postganglionic fiber is very short. That's another characteristic of the parasympathetic nervous system. Okay, and don't forget, there are two, preganglionic and postganglionic. So what are these? What does the parasympathetic nervous system do? You can look in your book, and there are, oh, maybe 100 good functions of the parasympathetic nervous system, but I give you four right here for you to memorize for sure on the test. You don't have to memorize every particular one. All right, parasympathetic stimulation on the heart does what? It decreases heart rate. Right? You don't want to have that part of the nervous system overly stimulated, because what could happen? Yeah, your heart could stop beating. That's never a good thing. Okay? So you don't want to overstimulate that. All right, but on the digestive system, parasympathetic stimulation does what to digestion? It's down over here a little bit. It what? Increases digestion. All right, what about respiration? Decreases, right? And it also causes your pupils to constrict. So a good way to characterize this division of the autonomic nervous system is to call it the rest and digest nervous system. So when you're in a very calm mood, when you're resting, right, or digesting food, like right after lunch, you feel like taking a nap, okay, your heart rate decreases, your pupils will constrict, and you're under the influence of the parasympathetic nervous system. Okay, and so these other two points down here just says that both the preganglionic and postganglionic fibers release acetylcholine at the ganglionic junction right here as well as on the effector organ. Acetylcholine is used in both cases. And when a nerve fiber releases acetylcholine, we call it a cholinergic fiber. So both the preganglionic and postganglionic fibers are what we call cholinergic because it releases acetylcholine. So let's look at these questions. Are the pre and postganglionic fibers of the parasympathetic nervous system cholinergic or adrenergic? You'd say cholinergic. And maybe you don't know what adrenergic is yet, but that's okay because we got a whole other division of the autonomic nervous system yet to talk about. Okay, but if you think of adrenergic, what's a chemical compound that you might be relating to when you hear that term adrenergic that you learned about before you even took a physiology or anatomy class? It is adrenaline, right? Adrenaline, right? Which is going to have the opposite effect compared to the parasympathetic nervous system. We're going to talk about that in a second. So how would you describe the difference between the pre and postganglionic neurons of the parasympathetic nervous system? Pre and post. So here we have pre and post. What about in terms of their length? Are they the same length? No, the preganglionics are much longer. What about myelination? Only the preganglionics are myelinated, right? So that is a difference between the pre and post. Even though they both are cholinergic, they still do have some differences between them. All right, so let's talk about the sympathetic nervous system. Sympathetic nervous system we see, okay, on this diagram right here. Where is it? Ah, here it is. That's one of them. Okay, here is the outflow pathway for the sympathetic nervous system. Now, on this slide, do you see any nerves leaving the cranium through any cranial nerves? No. What about the sacral region down here? Any sympathetic nerves leaving the central nervous system? No. Where do they leave? Between thoracic 1, T1, down to L2. So sometimes we call the sympathetic nervous system the thoracolumbar autonomic nervous system, because that's the only way out for sympathetic nerve fibers. All right, so they leave. And then on some in lab, some people were asking me, what the heck was this thing on those models of the nervous system? Right? These parallel the spinal cord. They're found on either side of the spinal cord. The only way to get into this nervous tissue right here is via these sympathetic nerves right here. So this is just a part of the sympathetic nervous system, and it's kind of like a little auxiliary spinal cord for just sympathetic outflow. So there's one on the right, there's also going to be one on the left. These are what we call sympathetic chain ganglia. All right, so what do we have in a ganglia? Nerve cell bodies and dendrites, because sometimes there are many synapses between the preganglionic and postganglionic fibers in this region right here. The other reason why a sympathetic nervous system has sympathetic chain ganglia, they're all linked together, because sometimes a sympathetic signal will enter the sympathetic chain ganglia and will then go up a number of divisions, or it can go down a number of divisions before it synapses and then leaves. So remember, one of the characteristics of the sympathetic nervous system is a divergence of signals. Once a sympathetic signal leaves the central nervous system, it goes everywhere in the body, because it can travel up or down these sympathetic chain ganglia, right, to innervate many different organs. So there's a sympathetic chain ganglia over here as well. They act like what? Just auxiliary spinal cords for sympathetic outflow. And it goes to many different parts of the body. These are all preganglionic fibers. And then the lighter color, these are the postganglionic fibers. Notice how long the postganglionic fibers are. Right? The parasympathetics are really short, but the sympathetic postganglionic fibers are relatively long. They go all the way almost right next to the spinal cord to these effector organs. So it has to be a long fiber, but they're still non-myelinated. They're unmyelinated fibers. Okay, and they go to some places like the heart and the lung, just like the parasympathetic nerve fibers did. Okay, but what's a neurotransmitter that's used in the ganglion right here between the pre- and postganglionic fibers? What's the neurotransmitter? That was that first diagram we looked at. That is acetylcholine. So the preganglionic fibers are cholinergic, but the postganglionic fibers do not release acetylcholine on the effector organs. It releases norepinephrine. So these postganglionic fibers right here, we can't call them cholinergic. We call them adrenergic, because epinephrine is the same name as adrenaline, and norepinephrine is the same as noradrenaline. Probably haven't heard of noradrenaline, but sometimes people call it that. Certainly you've heard of adrenaline before, right? And that's the same thing as epinephrine. Those are sympathetic signaling compounds. Okay, so what are some effects of sympathetic stimulation? Okay, well, we said that the autonomic nervous system, the two divisions, sympathetic and parasympathetic, are antagonistic to each other. And for parasympathetic, what did we say about heart rate? It decreased heart rate. So what would you just automatically expect for sympathetic on heart rate? It increases, right? And digestion will be the opposite of parasympathetic. So it decreases digestion. And respiration increases respiration. And instead of pupil constriction, it causes pupil dilation, right? Opposite effects. So these organs do have dual innervation. And sympathetic and parasympathetic have opposite effects. So you can't memorize, or you can't say for sure that sympathetic is always excitatory, because here's an example where it inhibits digestion. The only thing you can say for sure is, what is the relationship between parasympathetic and sympathetic? It is opposite or antagonistic to each other. Okay. But now this is a way for it to make sense. we said that the parasympathetic nervous system is the, if we were going to characterize it in everyday language, is the rest and digest. The sympathetic nervous system is the fight or flight nervous system. So when you're presented with a very stressful situation or life-threatening situation, which nervous system is activated? It's the sympathetic nervous system. So what do you need to deal with that threat? What are some important functions in your body? Okay, like all of a sudden there's a fire alarm and building blows up on campus. What nervous system is going to be activated? Sympathetic. So should your heart be nice and quiet? No, it should be beating quickly with a lot of force, producing high blood pressure so that blood is transmitted everywhere in your body, bringing oxygen throughout your body. And in order to take oxygen everywhere in your body, what about your pulmonary or lung function? Should your airways to your lungs be dilated or constricted? Should be dilated so you have good ventilation and oxygen delivery to your tissues, right? So increased respiration. Now what about digestion? What about that Snickers bar that you just had before the fire alarm went off? Is that important to deal with? Probably not, right? So we take blood away from the digestive tract, give it to your brain, to your heart, to your skeletal muscles, so that they can function properly when you're in a stressful situation, right? And when you're in a stressful situation, should your eyes be constricted or the iris constricted so that you can't see very much? Or should it be dilated so that you get a good picture of what's happening around you? Dilated so you get a really good picture, right? So if you think about parasympathetic and sympathetic in those general ways, then you could probably figure out what the proper effect is on various organs. If it's an organ that has to be activated when you're in a stressful situation, then the sympathetic nervous system will be stimulatory. If it's an organ that's not necessary for that particular circumstance, then it's probably under the control of the parasympathetic nervous system. Okay. All right, so don't forget, the preganglionics for sympathetic are always acetylcholine, but now the postganglionic neurotransmitter is norepinephrine. We can find some examples where acetylcholine is used, and maybe a few other kinds of compounds, but those are kind of rare examples and are really exceptions to the rule that postganglionic neurons are, these ones right here, are adrenergic fibers. So adrenergic fibers release norepinephrine. Cholinergic fibers release what kind of neurotransmitter? Acetylcholine, right? They have different shapes, so they will excite different kinds of receptors on the effector organ cell membranes. Okay, so how would you describe the difference between pre- and postganglionic neurons of the sympathetic nervous system? Well, here we have sympathetic nervous system. The preganglionic fibers are relatively short. The postganglionics are relatively long. The preganglionics are cholinergic because they release acetylcholine, and the postganglionics are, okay, what's the neurotransmitter that's released by the postganglionic fibers? Norepinephrine, and since it's norepinephrine, what kind of nerve fibers are they? They are adrenergic. They're adrenergic, right, as opposed to cholinergic. Okay. So those are some important differences. Now the other difference between the sympathetic and parasympathetic, sympathetic outflow can happen from the CNS between T1 and L2, but parasympathetic is what? Craniosacral, has totally different outflow pathways, but it still requires two neurons to get to the effector organ. Okay. All right, so those are some important things. Let's look in a little bit more detail. You have some really good examples in your book. I guess I think I want to stick with this slide right here. All right, for parasympathetic outflow, we said that the ganglia are in the effector organs, but there are two locations for sympathetic outflow. One ganglia will be in the sympathetic chain right over here, but every once in a while, a sympathetic nerve will enter the sympathetic chain but not synapse there, it will pass right through and go to a different ganglia in another part of the body. These ganglia in the sympathetic chain that are on either side of the spinal cord are called the paravertebral ganglia. That means on either side of the spinal cord. But these ganglia right here are in front of the spinal cord, so they're going to be anterior to the spinal cord. And so we call these the prevertebral. So prevertebral is another kind of ganglia as opposed to the paravertebral in the sympathetic chain. And here we see a preganglionic fiber passing right through the sympathetic chain, going to a prevertebral ganglion, and each of these nerves have a common name. All these nerves contain preganglionic fibers. These are what we call splanchnic nerves. Right, a splanchnic nerve. They have different specific names, like here's the greater splanchnic, lesser splanchnic, okay, lumbar splanchnic. I'm not going to ask you to know greater, lesser, or lumbar, but I will ask you to know that this preganglionic fiber, as it passes right through the sympathetic chain without synapsing to a prevertebral ganglia, these are all what we call splanchnic nerves. So what kind of nerve is a splanchnic nerve? Is it a somatic nerve? Or is it an autonomic nerve? Autonomic, sure, because that's what we're talking about, right? And is it a parasympathetic nerve or a sympathetic nerve? It's a sympathetic nerve, right? So it's carrying sympathetic outflow to various organs, but before it gets to the effector organ, it's got a synapse and a ganglia someplace in front of the spinal cord. Okay. So here is a question. Name the nerve that connects the sympathetic chain with a collateral or prevertebral ganglia. So here's the prevertebral ganglia. Here is a nerve that connects the sympathetic chain to the prevertebral. That is a splanchnic nerve. And that's just a sympathetic nerve. So you should probably know that. Okay. There are some other things that we want to look at. Let me just see. Oh, we're on the very last page right here. Good. All right, let's look at, or I say, let's look at, well, let's look at this this one right here. Okay, so here are a bunch of bodies from vertebrae. Here are vertebral bodies, right? Here are some ribs that are coming around. Here is a spinal cord. Here are a bunch of rootlets forming this root. So what would we call this root right here? This is a ventral root, and is it motor or sensory? It's 100% motor. Here is the dorsal root. Here's a dorsal root ganglia, so this is what? 100% sensory. So sympathetic nerves will leave the ventral root, and it's got to find its way into the sympathetic chain, right? And there's one on either side of the vertebral column, so we call these the paravertebral ganglia. All right, so here is a pathway where it can enter. Here's a pathway where it can leave. Right here, okay, and then these nerves can leave the sympathetic chain, right? So I wanted you to see where the sympathetic chain ganglia are. They're right on either side of the vertebral column. Let's look at a little bit different diagrammatic representation. We'll just look at one level instead of all these levels. All right, so here we have the cell body of a sympathetic neuron in a lateral horn of the gray matter of the spinal cord. And then is this going to leave the ventral root if it's a motor neuron or the dorsal root? Ventral root because it's what? An efferent neuron. So it leaves the ventral root, joins the spinal nerve. Now, this is the preganglionic fiber. Is it myelinated or not myelinated? It is myelinated, right? The preganglionic is myelinated. The postganglionic is not myelinated. So it enters the ventral root into the spinal nerve. And it passes this first branch, and it goes into the second branch, and then into the sympathetic chain. This is all the preganglionic neuron. All right, so since it's myelinated, what is the color of this little bridge right here in real life? It's actually going to look white, right, because it's a myelinated fiber. This is what we call a ramus communicantes, or ramus communicans. And in particular, this is the white ramus communicans because this is a nice myelinated fiber, bringing in sympathetic information to the sympathetic chain right here. And this is a ganglia, so there's a bunch of nerve cell bodies and dendrites. So here is the postganglionic fiber that's actually going to then leave the sympathetic chain, go into this nerve, and then that's going to follow that nerve to whatever effector organ it's designed to go to. It could be a gland in the skin or to some smooth muscle in a blood vessel. All right. Now, what can you tell me about the postganglionic fiber for sympathetic outflow? Is it myelinated or not myelinated? It is not myelinated, right? So what color does it look like? It's going to be gray. So here's the gray ramus communicans or communicantes, right? Because it carries a postganglionic fiber to the effector organ right here. Okay, so we're going to draw this on the board in just a little bit. So remember, first the gray one for exiting the sympathetic chain. The second one is the white ramus communicantes for entering the sympathetic chain ganglia. All right, so that's one possibility. But once this preganglionic fiber, okay, enters the sympathetic chain, it doesn't have to synapse right here in the ganglia. It can actually arise. It could go cranial a couple divisions or inferiorly descend through the sympathetic chain, or it could even pass straight through. A number of different options. We only see one particular option on this slide. The last thing that I would like to say on this slide right here is that since this is a sympathetic outflow pathway, there's only one area of the spinal cord that has a lateral horn. Here I see the cell bodies for the sympathetic nervous system in the lateral horn. Voluntary motor neurons have their cell bodies in the ventral horn right here. So what parts of the spinal cord have a lateral horn? Only between T1 and L2, because that's the only division that can generate what? Sympathetic outflow, because it is what? Thoracolumbar. So only between T1 and L2 have these lateral horns. Let's look at another slide. Okay, here we see the cell bodies in the lateral horns, leaving the ventral root, entering the sympathetic chain via the, what is this right here? The white ramus communicantes into the sympathetic chain, and we see it arising one division before it leaves and goes out. Right, so this is a divergence of sympathetic signals. It doesn't use the gray ramus communicantes until it's up a division or two. Now here's another good example of another possibility. Here is the cell body in the lateral horn. Gray matter of the spinal cord leaves the ventral root, because that's the motor root, right, into the spinal nerve, entering the white ramus communicantes into the sympathetic chain. But it doesn't synapse here, and it doesn't go up or down. It passes straight through. And here is a prevertebral or collateral ganglia right here. We know that's a ganglia because I see a cell body. This is in front of the vertebral column in various locations. So what do we call a nerve that connects a sympathetic chain with the prevertebral ganglia? That's just going to be a splanchnic nerve. You don't have to know the different divisions of splanchnic nerves. Okay, you should just know that that is a splanchnic nerve. So if you hear that sometime, you know, you have an idea of where it is. And what kind of information is the splanchnic nerve carrying? Is it voluntary information or autonomic? It's autonomic. Furthermore, what part of the autonomic nervous system? Sympathetic. Yeah, it's carrying sympathetic signals, which activates what part of that nervous system? The fight and flight or rest and digest? Fight and flight part of the autonomic nervous system. Okay, so here we have a relatively short myelinated fiber and a relatively long unmyelinated postganglionic fiber. As a review, what neurotransmitter is used across the synapse right here? This is a chemical synapse. So in the ganglia, what neurotransmitter is used? It is, even for sympathetic nervous system, remember it's the same as the parasympathetic nervous system, so it is acetylcholine. So this preganglionic fiber is what we call a cholinergic neuron. All right, but now here is the postganglionic fiber. What's the neurotransmitter at this chemical synapse? It's norepinephrine. So how do we classify this postganglionic neuron? It is not cholinergic. It is adrenergic because it's releasing norepinephrine right there. All right, but it always requires two to get to the effector organ. There's only one case where it is different. Okay? And that is when sympathetic nerves go to the adrenal medulla. Right? Here is a nerve cell body in the lateral horn. It leaves the ventral root, enters the sympathetic chain via the white ramus communicantes, because this is, remember, the preganglionic is myelinated. It goes all the way It never synapses in a ganglia. It goes all the way to the adrenal medulla where it synapses for the first time. So you could actually consider the adrenal medulla as like being a ganglion someplace. But now these cells right here are special modified neurons that don't carry electrical impulses. Right? These are chromaffin cells. When they get stimulated by acetylcholine, they immediately release norepinephrine and epinephrine, which gets picked up by this capillary then that takes this sympathetic signal where? Everywhere in your body. Okay, so these chromaffin cells act like a postganglionic fiber, but they're really, since they're releasing a signaling compound that gets picked up by a capillary, there's no duct right here, this adrenal medulla is really acting like an endocrine gland. And epinephrine and norepinephrine in this case are really acting like hormones. Right? But they're being released by cells that kind of look like neurons, so actually we should consider epinephrine and norepinephrine in this particular case as being neurohormones, right? A combination of both endocrine system and nervous system. So in a lot of advanced anatomy classes and physiology classes, you don't just study the nervous system by itself as one chapter and the endocrine chapter, or the endocrine system as a separate chapter. You study them all together as the neuroendocrine system because there are a number of cases where they interface together, right? They interact with each other. It's not just simply one or the other. Okay, so let's ask some more questions. Why is the white ramus communicans white and the gray ramus communicans gray? Why is the white one white? It has myelin, it has preganglionic myelinated fibers. And the gray ramus communicans is gray because it has non-myelinated postganglionic fibers in it. Right. Name the nerve that connects sympathetic chain to collateral. Oh, we answered that one already. That is what? A splanchnic nerve, right? So here is, again, a splanchnic nerve that goes to the adrenal medulla. Right. And I think we've talked about all of these things already. Oh, maybe not. Let's ask this question. What's the general name for the chemicals norepinephrine and epinephrine, which are secreted from the adrenal medulla? Right, here they are over here. The general name for these things right here are called catecholamines. Catecholamines. I think we looked at that in the endocrine chapter. Are the quasi-postganglionic cells of the adrenal medulla nerve cells or endocrine cells? We're talking about these chromaffin cells right here. Are these nerve cells or endocrine cells? They actually function as both, right? So they're really what? Neuroendocrine cells. So that's a kind of a nasty trick question. They have characteristics of both. And that's just life. That's just the way it goes. That's the interface between the endocrine and nervous system. All right. And what's the general name for the chemical norepinephrine, which is secreted from... Oh, wait, now I think I know how to answer this one. No, I was right there. Okay. What is the general name for the chemical norepinephrine, which is secreted from a postganglionic sympathetic neuron? What's another name for norepinephrine? Okay. General name, it would be a neurotransmitter. Okay. Or you could call it what? Noradrenaline. So noradrenaline or norepinephrine in this particular circumstance would be called a neurotransmitter, but not a hormone, because it just diffuses across the synapse. It's not picked up by the blood. All right, so pencil those things in your study guides right here, in your lecture notes. All right, so I think it's time to do a little drawing to help solidify at least the sympathetic nervous system. And we can do a drawing if I have a marker and I don't have my pencil case with me. You have a marker that I can write on that board? Oh, that is so nice. You can just flip it down. Okay, that's even better. Okay, let me know if I should turn the lights on. Okay, so this I'm going to make this a quiz for a lab someday. Okay, not next time, I don't think, but a quiz one of these times. So let's just start right here. Can you all see that pretty well? Should I turn on a light? Is that better? Maybe a little bit worse? Who knows? Okay. So, this thing right here, and here's a little central canal. So this right here is a nice drawing of what? The spinal cord. And I'm going to abbreviate that, SC, spinal cord. Right? So that's arising and descending through the vertebral column. And then how many different ways can signals leave the spinal cord? Remember, that's part of what nervous system? Spinal cord is part of central nervous system. So how do signals leave this part of the central nervous system? How many different ways? Only two ways. What are the two ways? They're both roots, but they're either the dorsal root, right? So here's dorsal, right? That's posterior. Here is anterior. Let's put it down over here. Anterior. So here is a dorsal root. I'm going to abbreviate it DR. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Now, the dorsal root has a special little node on it. What do we call that node? What's in that node? That's a ganglion. And it's what? The dorsal root ganglion. Remember, nerve cell bodies and dendrites of unipolar neurons. So here is the central process, and here is the peripheral process going out to the periphery. Now, what kind of neuron is that? What kind of traffic is it? How would you classify the function of this neuron? It is afferent or sensory, right? So signals go in, just like that. All right, what's another way for entering or leaving the central nervous system at the spinal cord? Ventral root. So here's a ventral root right here. And what's the function of the ventral root? Purely 100% motor or efferent. Signals are always leaving. Those are the two ways in or out. They join together to form this structure right here. What do we call this thing where they join together? That's the spinal nerve. Yeah, it's a spinal nerve right there. What's the function of a spinal nerve? Is it afferent, efferent? It is what? The proper term is, I heard it, is what we call mixed. The function is mixed, which is what? Both afferent and efferent, right? Remember, nerve fiber can only be one or the other, but we have now nerve fibers from both roots joining together here. So it's mixed. The function is mixed. That's the spinal nerve. Okay. Then there are these little auxiliary spinal cords on either side of the vertebral column for sympathetic neurons. What do we call those things that travel up and down the spinal cord? And so I'll kind of diagram it right here. Like just little spinal cords for sympathetic outflow. Where are those things at? Here it is right here. Here's one right here. The sympathetic chain ganglia, right? And that's the name says it all. It's not part of the parasympathetic nervous system. It's a sympathetic chain ganglia, so you got a bunch of nerve cell bodies in there again. So you have what? Sympathetic chain ganglia, SCG, I'll just abbreviate it so it's not so long. Okay. Now, how do sympathetic nerves get into the sympathetic chain ganglia? Okay, so you have a cell body in the lateral horn, leaves the ventral root, goes into the spinal nerve, and it enters right here. So this is a preganglionic fiber. Are those myelinated or not myelinated? Myelinated. So what color is it? White. And remember, that's called the ramus communicantes or ramus communicans. So we'll say white ramus communicans right there, WRC. And let's just say that it synapses on a postganglionic fiber, so there's a cell body of a postganglionic fiber. Therefore, we really see this as a nice ganglia in the peripheral nervous system, right? And then here is the postganglionic fiber leaving the sympathetic chain, right? So it's going to come over here. Signals enter via this one, and it goes into the back into the nerve, and then it's going to follow that nerve to wherever the effector organ is. So now, what the heck do we call this pathway right here? The postganglionic fiber, is it myelinated or not myelinated? It's not myelinated, so this is the gray ramus communicans right there. So that kind of describes the sympathetic nervous system pretty nicely. But where can this scenario exist? Can it exist in the cervical region? No. What about thoracic region? Yes, because is the sympathetic nervous system is what? Thoracolumbar, but not sacral region. So not from cranial nerves, not from sacral nerves. Cranial nerves either. Okay. What is another thing that I want to put on here? Well, we might have a sympathetic nerve that enters the ventral root, right, and then travels through the white ramus communicantes. Let me put it over here. So it enters the sympathetic chain ganglia, but it doesn't synapse there. It goes all the way to a ganglia that's in front of the spinal cord. So this is a prevertebral ganglia. And what do we call this nerve going from sympathetic chain to a prevertebral ganglia? That's going to be, we're going to call an SPN. We can't call it an SN because we have spinal nerve already. This is splanchnic. And I think I know how to spell splanchnic. All right, it's got kind of a funny spelling. That won't be on a practicum for you, but you should probably know. Okay, and so here's a prevertebral ganglia, and then here is the postganglionic fiber that goes to some effector organ someplace, like a gland or cardiac muscle. Okay, so that's pretty good. We're going to redraw this thing in just a little bit, but what neurotransmitter is used right here? Between the preganglionic and postganglionic sympathetic neurons. This is acetylcholine. And what neurotransmitter is used here at the end of the postganglionic fiber for sympathetic nervous system? That is norepinephrine. So this is an adrenergic fiber, and the preganglionic is a cholinergic fiber. Okay, remember, for a parasympathetic nervous system, they're both cholinergic. But for the sympathetic nervous system, they are both, one is cholinergic and the other is adrenergic. All right, so that's autonomic nervous system. That's probably the most complicated nervous system that you have to know in this class. Okay, so let's just draw this out. Okay, and I probably want you to practice that sometime and make sure you get your nice marker back too at the end of class. Okay, so let me erase this. Okay, so does that seem really complicated or not too bad? Raise your hand for overly complicated. Seems overly complicated. Well, that means we need to practice just a little bit. Okay, so for sympathetic outflow, where are we going to start? How does sympathetic information leave the central nervous system? From the spinal cord, levels T1 through L2, right? And so it's called thoracolumbar. So here is the spinal cord. And signals can enter or leave. They can enter via what? The dorsal root. Here is the dorsal root ganglia right there. Then here is the ventral root. They join together to form the spinal nerve, right? And then sympathetic nerve, the preganglionic fiber, can enter the sympathetic chain ganglia or the paravertebral. That means on either side. All right, so since this is a myelinated fiber, that's the white ramus communicans. And here's a nice chemical synapse to the postganglionic fiber that is going to leave the sympathetic chain. And it's a non-myelinated fiber, so that's the gray ramus communicantes. Or there could be a sympathetic fiber that enters the sympathetic chain but passes right through without synapsing until it reaches a prevertebral ganglia, right, where it then synapses on a postganglionic fiber. And then this thing right here, the connection between the sympathetic chain and the prevertebral ganglia, is what? A splanchnic nerve. You don't have to know the subdivisions of a splanchnic nerve. All right, so I think that's almost everything that we had on that previous diagram. So it's not really bad once you do it a couple times. The only other thing that I would put on here is that this spinal nerve right here, remember, this is, think of a, what's a coronal plane? Show me a coronal plane. Is it like this? No, it's exactly, here's a coronal plane, right? So think of a coronal plane right through the vertebral column like this. So you have a part of your body that's anterior to the spinal cord, and you have a part that's posterior. Where do you have most of your body? Anterior or posterior? Most of it's anterior, right? So this spinal nerve has to bifurcate to go and innervate things behind the spinal cord and in front of the spinal cord, and these things are called, these are rami as well. So this would be the ventral ramus, and this would be the dorsal ramus, and I think I probably have to put like a little A right there. Because we got what? We got DR here already and VR down there. Remember, so the dorsal ramus innervates everything, like erector spinae in your back, posterior to the vertebral column, and this innervates everything that's anterior to the vertebral column. So this is what? Much bigger than the dorsal ramus. So maybe the last two things I would put on there. So how about, you want to do it one more time? Let's do it one more time. Yeah. Dorsal ramus, ventral ramus. The who? Ramus. R-A is ramus. Because if I just use R, I use root for plain old R. So it would be a little bit confusing. Okay. Now remember, what's the difference between a root and a ramus? A root and a ramus. Roots are 100% motor or sensory, but not both. But a ramus is going to be mixed, just like the spinal nerve right here. Okay. So this is, I don't know, this is a really good diagram for you guys to know. All right, so I'm erasing it because it gives you a picture of those sympathetic chain ganglia and everything. All right, sign-in sheet is going around somewhere, I think. So it will come down to the front of the class, right, when we're done with lecture. All right, so I'll just kind of time myself and see what I'm forgetting. Okay, so here we got what? Spinal cord. And here we've got dorsal root. And here is the dorsal root ganglia. And then here is the ventral root for motor signals. All right, and then here is the spinal nerve. And then the spinal nerve is going to go posterior and anterior. So this would be the dorsal ramus. And here would be the ventral ramus. But if there's sympathetic nerves right here, what do they have to do? They got to do something special. They have to leave the spinal nerve and go into the sympathetic chain ganglia, where they might synapse on the postganglionic cell, and then leave the sympathetic chain to re-enter the spinal nerve to go to wherever it wants to go. So here, since this is a myelinated fiber, this is the white ramus communicans. Here is the unmyelinated postganglionic. So here is the gray ramus communicans. Or a sympathetic fiber might just pass through the sympathetic chain to a pre-vertebral ganglia, right? And then you have the postganglionic cell right here, and then this would be what? The asplenic nerve, just like that. And you've got what? Acetylcholine here. You've got acetylcholine here, right? Because it's always between the pre- and postganglionic fiber, but the postganglionic fiber for sympathetic outflow is adrenergic, so what's the neurotransmitter used right here? Norepinephrine. Ooh, that took me longer than a minute. Was a minute and 40 seconds. I bet we could get it under a minute if we really wanted to. Okay, so that's a lot about the sympathetic nervous system. One last thing I want to say about sympathetic nervous system. So we're not going to get onto senses today. We're going to start that next time. Okay, just consider the following little scenario. Okay, so like today, when you're done with class, some of you have lab, maybe some other classes this afternoon, you got to go to work. All right, so you leave campus and you drive to work and you check in and maybe you work at Hollywood Video or someplace like that. Okay, and it just so happens you didn't have a lot of customers when you get there, right, because everybody's downloading movies now from the internet. But it was fortunate because when you got to work, you had your anatomy book with you, right? So now you're at work and you're earning a salary, which is really good, so you got income coming in, and you're not really busy, so what do? Open up your anatomy book, and so you start answering questions at the end of the chapter. Maybe you got your notebook with you or your smartphone, and you start doing some exercises online, right? And you're learning a lot, you're accomplishing a lot, plus you're getting paid while you're doing that. So how do you feel? That's awesome, right? So what nervous system is operating when everything is really smooth like that and you're earning money and you're learning a lot? What nervous system? The parasympathetic nervous system is activated. Things are really nice and calm. And, you know, so it's really still really quiet at work. And now it's 11:30 and you get to close up shop, so you got to close out the register. And so you look at all your receipts and it matches the amount of cash you have in the cash register, which is nice because now you don't have to put in $20 from your own wallet, right? Everything matches up really nice. And you answered all the end of chapter questions for 3 chapters. Right, so you accomplished a lot and you earned, you know, like $75 being at work all night long. So how are you feeling? Well, fantastic, right? That'd be great if that happened every day, okay? All right, so you pack things up and you're just about ready to turn the lights off in the building, and all of a sudden the power goes out. Because what might happen tonight? There might be a rainstorm coming by, right? So the power in the neighborhood goes out. And you go, that's too bad, but, you know, that's the way it goes. So you find your keys, and you step outside, and you notice the whole parking lot, no lights whatsoever, right? It's starting to rain a little bit. So you turn around, and you put your key in the lock, and you lock up, and you start walking to your car. Oh, and then you realize, when you got to work, the parking lot was full. So you didn't park in the parking lot, you had to park way out in the neighborhood someplace that you're not really familiar with, you know, like 4 blocks away. Say this is San Francisco. And so you start walking, okay? So now what's happening? What nervous system is becoming activated? It's raining, it's dark outside, okay? You're kind of all alone. What nervous system is being activated? Your sympathetic nervous system. So now your eyes are dilated. What about your heart rate? It's up. What about your respiratory rate? It's increased. Your airways are dilated, so you're ventilating very efficiently, right? So you're getting to your car, and then all of a sudden, you hear some footsteps behind you, okay? Now what happens to your heart rate for sure? What's going on? Yeah, you're starting to sweat, right? Your heart rate is elevated, your eyes are dilated, okay? So for sure your sympathetic nervous system is being activated, right? That fight or flight nervous system. And just as you get to your car, you hear my voice saying, oh, gee whiz, Diane, what are you doing out so late? All right? And now what nervous system is activated? Yeah, now you're relieved. Oh, I know a friend in the neighborhood right here. Everything is fine. Okay? So I didn't want to leave you in this terrible sympathetic state at the end of a lecture. So just compare those two divisions of the autonomic nervous system. What should they do in those two circumstances? And that will give you a feeling for what the effect is on various organs. But remember, they're always going to be to each other. They're going to be opposite to each other, right? Okay, so that's it for lecture today. Hey, Ron. All right, see you guys upstairs. You lucky people that have labs still. Yeah, let's go get them. Or I can put them in the drawer maybe. Yeah, then you don't have to haul them around.